Mr. Klein.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This case is about a bundle of sticks. It's about the divisibility of rights under the Copyright Act, and it is an infinite capacity to divide rights under the Copyright Act.
Now, Mr. Hansmeier, I think we all understand that, but what did not come through, for me at least, as well in your brief as I would have liked, is your very precise description, you know, kind of in 25 words or less, of which twigs or sticks or trunks of trees or whatever you think HyperQuest got.
HyperQuest got them all, Your Honor.
No, it didn't. Then you lose.
No, I respectfully disagree, and I'll explain why. We start out with Section 2A, and it says perpetual, worldwide, and exclusive.
Now, except as provided in 2B.
Correct.
So it's not perpetual, worldwide, or exclusive, since there's the 2B.
There it says exclusive except as a 2B. So we go to 2B. What does 2B exclude from the exclusive rights? First.
And we haven't gotten to Safe Flight yet, but anyway, we'll start with Insight.
Right.
However they pronounce their...
Safe Flight. First, we look at 2B, and it says exclusive in the territory. What is the territory? It's a defined term, the United States and Canada. So the grant in 2A of exclusive rights, except as set forth in Section 2B, takes out the rest of the world except for the United States and Canada. The United States and Canada...
No, I understand that, but that's not an issue here, really.
Well, we're going to go down all of 2B.
Nobody's talking about African, you know, distribution.
We'll go down all of 2B because one starts out, Your Honor, with a full grant that has very minor slices that are taken out.
So you're not able to actually tell me we are exclusive for X. You can't actually give me that description.
No, I can, Your Honor. We are exclusive. We are exclusive. We have the right to exclude. That's what exclusive means. We have the right to exclude for rights to copy, reproduce, to distribute, to prepare derivative works, and to display publicly.
So let's take copy first. There are exceptions, both with respect to Insight and with respect to Safelite, for the copying right. Now, you've spent a lot of time arguing about what those exceptions are, but just to take it a minimum, Insight had this earlier license. So for their own affiliates and for certain of their own purposes, they had copying rights too. Safelite also, this, you know, development language that's there in the license, had copying rights. So you aren't actually exclusive on copying. You are. So I want to know, how do you shave off some part of copying? Because as you said, you began by saying, you know, this is, you know, maybe we don't get down to the subatomic level, but there are lots of divisions, subdivisions, subdivisions, and so on that we could imagine.
Because exclusive, Your Honor, and this is where the district...
So what copying right of yours is exclusive, since I've already given you two examples where you don't have the right to exclude?
We don't have the right to exclude Insight, which was a prior non-exclusive licensee, from copying.
Right.
We don't have the right to exclude Safelight, which, under the contract and under Section 117 of the statute, has the right to copy. We can't exclude them from doing those things.
So
we can exclude.
Who else is at issue here?
Unitrin. And the copying that Insight did was unauthorized copying because Insight only had the right to copy within its four walls, within its subsidiaries. When it copies and then it sends those copies outside, when it distributes, when it creates derivative work through the copies that it made, it's in violation of our exclusive rights because there was a prior non-exclusive license. As a part of this document, Safelite had certain minimal rights it retained. Those would be defenses to our infringement action. If we sued EnSite for making copies within its four walls, it would say, we're not infringing because we have a non-exclusive license that permits us to do that.
Okay, so can I state this then in the affirmative, which is what I'm trying to get to? It is your position, obviously we can all assume that if there were merits trial, all of this would be contested, but it is your position that as to copying, HyperQuest has an exclusive right to copy to all, vis-a-vis all entities other than the four walls of EnSite and whatever its grantor, SafeLight, reserved for itself. That everything outside those two domains is yours exclusively. Am I correct that that's your position?
As to EnSite, SafeLight itself had the right to copy because it retained rights.
That's what I was trying to say. EnSite, your position, so there are two domains that are carved out of your bundle of exclusive rights to copy. One of them is what you've described as within the four walls of EnSite. The other is whatever SafeLight reserved for itself in the license. You know, we don't have to go through every last word of the license. There are some reservations for SafeLight itself. But other than those two boxes, if you will, your position is that HyperQuest is exclusive as to all other copying that might go on. And so your position, I think, is if you have alleged copying outside of those two domains, you have alleged something that you are entitled to pursue in a lawsuit.
Correct, Your Honor.
That's your view. Okay, and can I just ask you, in light of the Supreme Court's March 2nd decision in Reed Elsevier against Muchnick, whether maybe we should be talking about your right of action as opposed to anything about standing or jurisdiction? The court, once again, in Reed Elsevier, stresses that it doesn't want the word jurisdiction overused.
Well, I think here subject matter jurisdiction and standing got squashed together, unfortunately.
And I'm saying, and the briefs in this case clearly state that there's no subject matter jurisdiction problem per se. This arises under 1331, 1338. The court can hear the case. Standing, I think you're talking about a statutory right, personally, because if I think of Lujan, it's easy for me to see injury in fact on the part of your client. It's easy for me to see that the people you've sued caused that injury in fact. And it's also easy enough for me to see that the result of the lawsuit could redress your injury. And so those are the three elements of constitutional standing under Lujan. So I think you're at the next level down into the statute. And I'm really wondering, after Reed Elsevier, whether the Supreme Court wants us to think of that more in the nature of, do you have a right of action as a licensee holding whatever package of rights?
I completely agree. And then one looks to the statute and says, what do you need to bring an infringement action? Well, if you're an owner of a copyright, or you are an exclusive licensee of a copyright who then has ownership rights to enforce, you can bring that infringement action.
Because the Copyright Act likes simplicity. The Copyright Act wants one and only one entity at any given time to be the authorized enforcer. It's not like the patent law that has, you know, Rule 19 necessary parties floating around and all the rest of that. It's I see the Copyright Act that really wants that form of simplicity. Now, maybe it's not the world's simplest if you've got to shave down the rights so far, but at least once you finally have defined the rights under the Copyright Act, there's only one entity.
And we are that entity, Your Honor, because of the grant. The grant that SafeLight gave to us saying exclusive and all those other things. And then even within that grant under 2A, it parrots the rights that exist under Section 106 of the copyright statute.
As I understand SafeLight or the defendant's position, though, it's maybe not so much the EnSite license that undermines your position, but it's instead the fact, because I realize that the whole reason this case exists is the $600,000 sale to Unitrin, but it's really more that SafeLight retained so much that it's finally that entity which should have the enforcement rights, and if you've got a beef, it's with Safelite.
But that's the pitch of the defendants, Your Honor. In fact, Safelite retained virtually nothing. Virtually nothing. Go out, forget about United States and Canada and worldwide. What did Safelite retain? It retained the right to compete with HyperQuest for claims management solutions. But then it gets pared down. It's defined. So what does Safelite retain? It retains the right to use the EDOC software in the auto glass parts business, because that was Safelite's business. And you look throughout the document. You look in paragraph 2A. We can't sublicense to competitors of Safelite in the auto glass business. You look at 2B, the claims management solution. HyperQuest has the full rights with respect to automobile parts, and the only thing that Safelite can do and compete with HyperQuest on is auto glass parts. You go to section 9B, and if HyperQuest is selling itself, it can't sell to companies who are specifically named who are in the auto glass business, which was Safelite's business. So the transaction, which is an integrated transaction here, this is part of a master agreement, a promissory note, et cetera, is Safelite is granting to my client HyperQuest all rights with very, very limited reservations to the EDOC software, and Safelite is going out of that business except for auto glass parts. HyperQuest has the rest.
What about the fact that the license obligates you to give back to Safelite any changes or improvements or other modifications in the software, and says that that will continue to be Safelite's property?
Until a certain stage is passed, until full integration and so on. So Safelite retains ownership. Okay? What is ownership? Why is ownership important in this circumstance? For two reasons. One, if we default, if HyperQuest defaults in payment obligations, or, importantly here, HyperQuest does not make this product market ready, which is defined within 1 year, everything reverts back to Safelite. And Safelite, as the owner, owns all of the exclusive rights again. The ones that it gave to us, but it flips. It goes back to Safelite. Number two, there is the issue of territory, which I think is important. In Mexico, for instance, both parties have the right to use EDOC in the Mexican automobile insurance industry. Neither is exclusive as to the other. They are competitors there, Safelite and HyperQuest. But in the United States and Canada, EnSite can't copy, it can't create derivative works, Unitrain can't copy, it can't display, it can't do any of those things. We have bargained for and paid a lot for those rights. I'd like to reserve a few minutes for rebuttal unless the court has additional questions for me now.
Well, not at this time. Thank you, Mr. Klein. Ms. Wine?
May it please the court. HyperQuest has just informed the court that what they're arguing is that they have exclusive broad rights.
Well, actually, I think what they're arguing is that perhaps you are viewing this too much in gross, and that there are particular rights, such as the right in the United States and Canada to distribute and to copy to entities other than EnSite and perhaps other than Safelite, this software, and that at least, again, as a matter of allegation, nobody's worrying about the merits right now, as a matter of allegation, if they say that EnSite has distributed to an outsider, that that is an infringement of this more narrow exclusivity. And since the Copyright Act does permit all manner of divisions of exclusive rights, and apparently we don't worry about the antitrust implications of this anymore, that they at least can go forward with this lawsuit, and presumably EnSite would have defenses and so forth, but that's for the merits. That's what I understand them to be saying.
But
so
John,
if you could
I think,
respond to that.
I think you got it right when you said that this has to do with what the statute provides as a cause of action. The statute says that only an exclusive licensee has standing to sue for infringement.
Right,
of
and
the
exclusive
right.
As to what? It's not that you have to have the full package of rights, copy, distribute, derivative works, on and on. The copyright statute permits the owner of the copyright to give one entity certain distribution rights, maybe the United States and Canada, somebody else, the European rights. It can divide things up in all sorts of ways. Do you think there are limitations on this ability to divide up?
I don't,
so,
Your Honor.
What are they?
Counsel started with an allusion to the bundle of sticks, and it's fine to take those bundle of sticks and divide and subdivide each individual stick. And even if what you're left with is only a sliver or a toothpick, that right has to be exclusively to one licensee. And if not, that licensee does not have standing to sue for an infringement to
right.
enforce that
no, I,
particular
I,
right.
I get that.
HyperQuest has conceded that both EnSite and SafeLight had rights to use the software.
But I think his point, if I'm understanding him, is that although they shared to a certain extent, just let's stick again with copying. I think we could run through this for any of the other rights. Although they share the right to copy to a limited degree with EnSite and SafeLight, there are contractual license limitations on EnSite's right to copy, and for that matter, distribute, et cetera. Namely, it's got to stay inside EnSite. EnSite doesn't have, never did have in its license,
okay,
the
but,
right to distribute to others.
But, Your Honor, the license reserves to SafeLight the ability to enter into a revised license with EnSite.
Right.
And that revised license wouldn't necessarily be constricted to the four corners of the existing license.
Okay.
And the fact that SafeLight, as the owner of the copyright, has the ability to enter into a new revised license with EnSite that may give the precise right that was granted to HyperQuest.
So you're placing a lot of stock on that reservation, and I assume you're reading the license simply to give HyperQuest a seat at the table as opposed to any kind of veto rights over any such new license.
That's correct, Your Honor. Just including them in the determination of final terms would not be inconsistent with a non-exclusive licensee having some ability to have input into the terms of another license that's provided or granted to another entity. And remember that the agreement also gives SafeLight the ability to enter into licenses with other third parties, and that is for purposes of testing and development. As you mentioned, you didn't touch on the other two broad rights that HyperQuest alleges, which is the right of to prepare derivative works and the right of distribution. A development of software is the preparation of derivative works.
And that's what it has to be licensed back to or conveyed somehow back to SafeLight.
If HyperQuest, or I'm sorry, HQ Inc., which is the party that received the license, did some modification.
About the corporate succession.
I'm sorry?
I said I'm not that worried about the corporate succession here.
Okay. If HQ modified the software, then the rights to that software as modified was assigned through the contract to SafeLight. Mm-hmm. But SafeLight could also license to other third parties, and there's no restriction on the extent of those licenses. Obviously, they'd have to make a copy of the software to provide it to the third party for purposes of testing and development.
But it has to only be testing and development, so SafeLight didn't retain a right to license to third parties for business purposes in the automotive repair sector.
Correct, but in the district court, the HyperQuest argued that it had the broad right. It had the entire right to prepare derivative works. The district court said, no, that's not correct, because SafeLight has the right to license a third party to prepare derivative works. SafeLight could prepare derivative works itself because the terms of the license say that SafeLight can use the software, and the word use is defined in the agreement to mean the preparation of derivative works. Development, modification, those terms are all used in the agreement as what the term use means. So SafeLight has the right to prepare derivative works. SafeLight has the right to license third parties to modify the software.
But what's SafeLight going to do? Just sort of put them in the, you know, in the theoretical file cabinet? I mean, it's reserved the right to sit around and play with the software, but I guess under this license, only HyperQuest could take commercial advantage of the new software.
But that's the right that's being alleged of infringement. That's one of the exclusive copyright rights, the preparation of derivative works. That doesn't include the right to distribute a derivative work. It's just the actual act of preparing a derivative work is part of that bundle of sticks that comprise copyrights. That's
but, of course,
one
I mean, at the bottom line is that HyperQuest thinks that your client, you represent Unitree, right? That your client has infringed its rights by taking this EDOC software from EnSite instead of licensing it to HyperQuest, if it could have.
But the party that would have standing to enforce that is SafeLight. If EnSite has...
Even though SafeLight gave a fairly extensive and perhaps including commercialization bundle of rights to HyperQuest, and I would like to avoid the term standing if possible, but the party entitled to or whose rights have been infringed under the statute, in your view, is still... SafeLight, which itself isn't in the commercialization business anymore other than this autoglass sliver?
First of all, we're not conceding that SafeLight isn't in the commercialization business. The license says that SafeLight will use the software in its comprehensive estimate audit capability, that's SafeLight's claims management solutions, and they've reserved the right to continue using the software.
And you think that defeats any assumption that what HyperQuest has is exclusivity over commercialization outside EnSite?
That's correct, Your Honor. Additionally, SafeLight reserved in the license agreement the ability to sue EnSite for infringement. It's SafeLight's right to enforce or not enforce this copyright as to EnSite.
That's so the covenant language that you're talking about?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's that SafeLight is covenanting to take whatever action, if any, that SafeLight deemed appropriate. This means that if EnSite has somehow exceeded the bounds of what it was permitted to do, it's SafeLight that would have the ability to go after EnSite for that infringement. Mm-hmm. And even if HyperQuest is somehow harmed by an infringement. That happens all the time. Parties have a non-exclusive license. They may pay valuable consideration for that non-exclusive license, but that does not mean that they have standing or they have the ability to enforce the license. The fact that they're harmed by an infringement alone does not give them the ability to enforce, because only an exclusive licensee has the power to enforce. And, Your Honor, as far as the argument that HyperQuest has some smaller subdivision of rights than the entire bundle of rights that it argued to the district court, that argument would be waived, because this court has to take the case as it was presented to the district court. And nowhere in the multiple briefs, I think there were 7 briefs filed on the standing issue, in not one of those did HyperQuest make the argument that what it had was anything less than the entire right to reproduce the software, the entire right to prepare derivative works and distribute the software. That's what the district court considered. That's what was argued to the district court. And that's really what was alleged in the complaint. The complaint alleges that EnSite and Unitrin copied, used, distributed this software. It doesn't allege that they used it for a small sliver of rights that included auto parts. The language that SafeLight's HyperQuest is referring to has to do with the definition of HQ services, which talks about this parts usage, the selection and procurement and use of parts. And that's what the license to HQ says. It's the license is not the broad exclusive license that they're alleging now. It's specifically a license to use the EDOC software in source code form to support the development and commercialization of HQ services and to develop, modify, and enhance the EDOC software as HQ in its sole discretion determines, but provided that such modification and enhancements are solely related to the development and commercialization of HQ services. That's the same as any other non-exclusive license, that the licensee has
so
the right.
So what's all this use of the term? I mean, in some ways, as HyperQuest points out, your position requires us to disregard the fact that the license starts out by saying this is, you know, eternal, essentially. It's all-encompassing and eternal. It's exclusive, it's global, it's perpetual, it's all these grand words.
But as a matter of contract interpretation, any time there's a broad general right that's subject to more specific, more narrow rights, that's the way it has to be read. And this contract specifically says that the term exclusive is only exclusive except as set forth in paragraph 2B. And in section 2B is what the district court relied on, all of the reasons that the license is not exclusive. Because the license SOAR, SafeLight, did not part with complete rights to the rights that were licensed, it wasn't a grant of exclusive ownership of those particular rights.
Ms. Wine, if exclusive is indivisible, should it ever be used then in language granting a license? In other words, if exclusive houses is the 100% ownership, but you're going to give a license, then do you give it exclusive to this territory? I mean, isn't your argument that exclusive can't be in the hands of two?
You can have two exclusive licensees, but the rights that these licensees have can't overlap. As Judge Wood had said, you can have only one entity, one and only one entity, that can enforce whatever the specific right that's being alleged of infringement is.
Right. Well, doesn't that suggest indivisible if it's only one can enforce it? What is the meaning of if A has the exclusive right, you said it's a co-ownership or a sub-ownership in B?
The concept of divisibility goes to the actual exclusive right that comprises a copyright. That bundle of sticks, each one of the sticks in the bundle is divisible. But an exclusive licensee, and it's probably unfortunate that the term exclusive is used
right,
for both
that's
of
my
those.
Point. Should it be used in both senses, I guess? I mean, if exclusive has a particular meaning as to ownership, I understand this bundle and sticks business, I think, sort of, kind of. But it gets a little sticky, doesn't it, when you use it in the sense of the licensee's rights when you use exclusive?
Right. The concept of divisibility does not apply to an exclusive license. The exclusive grant of an interest must be exclusive.
Well, all you're saying is once it's been carved out and if it's been given to only one entity, then that entity has the enforcement right. If it's carved out and given to two or more entities, right, then the grantor still has right. the enforcement right. That I think that's all this amounts to.
Right.
And your position is that HyperQuest didn't wind up with something that didn't overlap sufficiently with other people's rights, so it's still the grantor, it's still SafeLight that has the enforcement right.
That's correct, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Klein. Mr. Klein?
Let me start out with Judge Flam's question, the word exclusive. The word exclusive appears in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8 of the United States Constitution. That's where the founders decided to first start dealing with, to your point, Judge Wood, a monopoly. Monopoly rights conferred by the Constitution enacted upon by Congress for limited periods of time in the patent and in the copyright area. Okay, it starts out with the Constitution, and then the Congress adopts the same word and uses exclusive, exclusive, exclusive over and over again. Parties in the commercial marketplace use the word exclusive because that defines the rights that they're getting from the Constitution and from the statutory entitlement. So everybody knows that an exclusive licensee has rights under the statute to enforce the rights that are conferred upon it. And in this agreement, the parties didn't make a mistake when they used the word exclusive. They intended it to mean exclusive, and we know that for a fact because look at the revised license agreement that was negotiated but never signed by SafeLight and Ensight. What word did SafeLight, which was the party common to both the HyperQuest agreement and the Ensight revised license, what word did SafeLight use? It used exclusive with HyperQuest, and it used non-exclusive with Ensight. So that was the same party. It knew what it was doing. And what the district judge did was to say, on a 12B motion, with no evidence produced by the defendants, ignoring the evidence produced by the plaintiff, the judge said exclusive, although he didn't actually come out and say this, he implied that exclusive really means non-exclusive. There was no basis at this procedural stage for the district court to dismiss our statutory right to bring this infringement action against parties that have taken the software that we paid for and that have been copying, reproducing, distributing, and making derivative works of it. The case must be reversed, and we ask most respectfully that the court employ Circuit Rule 36 on remand.
Mr. Klein, before you sit down, we haven't talked too much about case law today, which I find the absence of unhelpful. And you would think third century of the Republic, we would be favored with a little more. So with that backdrop, what case do you think would be that you've cited would be most informative?
I'll give you two sites, Your Honor, and I appreciate the question. One is the 1930 Second Circuit case, Western Electric, which this court in IAE Shaver, the Ninth Circuit in Sony and Silvers, have followed. And it's one of those old cases, 80 years old, Judge Swan deciding it for the Second Circuit, dealing with what is a license? What is an exclusive license? What is a bare license? And the reason it's important is that neither the copyright statute nor the patent statute defines license, exclusive license, or bare license. These are common law concepts that have to embody or flesh out what the Congress said in the statute. The second case is Kepner-Trigo from the Second Circuit, which is a wonderful case and fully supports our position. When the author or the owner, in that case Dr. Vroom, who taught at Yale, when the author or owner assigns an exclusive license to somebody else, they are Kepner-Trigo, but retains certain rights to do certain things, the author, here SafeLight for these purposes, Asinor, can do those things and has a defense to an infringement action. But if it goes outside the bounds of what it reserved, what Dr. Vroom did, he went way outside the bounds. He got sued in the district court in Texas, Fifth Circuit affirmed. Got sued in the district court in Connecticut, Second Circuit affirmed. And that case destroys the defendant's arguments because what they're saying is SafeLight retained something, a small little something, just like Dr. Vroom. Therefore, HyperQuest has no ability to sue. Wrong. SafeLight retained a little something, and it can do that something, but nobody else can do the things that HyperQuest was given exclusive status to do. Derivative works, reproduce, distribute, display. That's what HyperQuest bargained for. That's what it has the right to sue these defendants who have been infringing on those rights.
What about the second 80 years is I'm starting to think not so old anymore, but that is
behind you, Your Honor.
I'm with two very young judges. But what about the more recent Second Circuit case, Davis and Blige?
That's an interesting case. Mary J. Blige, the singer, as the defendant.
You can see my knowledge of contemporary pop culture is a little lacking.
Your Honor, I'll confess I learned a lot more about Mary J. Blige by reading the opinion that I did from my own life experience. But that was a case about co-authors. And could you retroactively deprive a co-author of rights to bring an infringement action? The answer was clearly was no, because co-authors have indivisible tenant in common type rights.
But to that point, do we have co-owners here?
We don't, Your Honor. We have one owner. HyperQuest is not an owner. SafeFlight is an owner. But we are an exclusive licensee, and the Congress said, when you are an exclusive licensee, you have rights under the statute as owner, as if you were an owner. And that is how commercially the Congress decided to deal with an important right in our economy, which is to slice, dice, chop, no matter how small, no matter how large, and give parties the right to exploit copyrights and, for that matter, patents.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.